Welcome to episode 140 of the Highly Relevant Podcast, and might I add, the Apple-featured Highly Relevant Podcast. So a friend of mine texted me this past weekend and says, yo, you should check out the Apple Podcast browser. You'll be surprised. And when I check it out, there I was with like Maria Hinojosa, Alicia Menendez, top banner homepage. And I mean, you could just only imagine the level of surrealness that I kind of went through at that moment. Because when you get into this business of podcasting, what's the pinnacle moment for you, right? In sports, there's a championship, there's a trophy at the end. But what is it for a podcaster, right? Obviously, it's to make money, but it's to reach the pinnacle of your industry. And Apple being featured on Apple's homepage top banner, that's like something in the back of your head that you're always like, man, that would be a dream if I could achieve it. And so I feel like I'm living a bit of a dream here. And it's great. So I wanted to thank all of you listeners for supporting us throughout the years. 3 years ago, I decided to do this show because I just did not see myself reflected or Latinx talent reflected in the mainstream coverage of entertainment news and just news period. You know, go look at the morning shows. Look at Morning America, the Today Show. Look at the evening news. Look at cable news. It's almost like Latinos don't exist, even though we're 18% of the population. And, you know, don't even get me into it. But that's why the Highly Relevant exists. It's to celebrate these Latin talents, these Latin creatives, these people that are reshaping what American mainstream pop culture is. It's not just white. It's also not just black. It's a melting pot of every single artist from every different culture that wants to partake in American culture. And hopefully we've done a great job of it. And I'm glad that it's being recognized by Apple. And, you know, hopefully I can continue doing these shows for you guys. So on today's episode.
Yeah, I thought I was crazy. I thought I couldn't pull it off because I didn't speak that good of a Spanish. But I delve into it, man.
And that's bilingual stand-up comedian Felipe Esparza, who joins me to discuss his historic bilingual Netflix comedy specials, Bad Decisions and Malas Decisiones. And the reason it's historic is because he recorded two separate performances, one in English and one in Spanish, which no Latino comedian has ever done before. Not Cristela, not George, not Fluffy Iglesias. So why haven't they, and why hasn't anyone else done it before? What made Felipe want to do it, and what does Felipe's achievement mean for comedy's evolution? Should all established and upcoming Latinx comedians take note? But before I talk to Felipe Esparza, it's time I give you my weekly review of what's happening in Latinx and mainstream pop culture in a segment I like to call Jacked In. Let's begin with the top movie, TV, and music news of the week. The 2020 Emmys viewership dropped to a new low of 6.1 million viewers compared to the record low of 7 million a year before. Broadway Cuban actor Nick Cordero's posthumous album, Live Your Life, hits number one on the day of release. Ellen DeGeneres apologized on her show for having a toxic workplace environment. Star of Hulu's Love, Victor, Michael Cimino, signs with CAA. D'Souza and Mero renewed at Showtime for a third season. Brazilian reggaeton star Anitta collaborated with Cardi B and Mike Towers on a new song called Me Gusta. And Stranger Things 4 could resume shooting production September 28th. And in tech and social media news, the ill-fated short-form content app Quibi is exploring options for a potential sale. Peacock officially launches on Roku. Trump agrees to TikTok-Oracle-Walmart partnership deal. Selena Gomez pleads with Facebook to better police misinformation and hate speech. Lego is making a Baby Yoda toy. And the new PlayStation 5 launches this November starting at $399.
First of all, man, congratulations on doing something I think that is historic, in my particular opinion.
Thank you, man. I think a lot of you have been saying that. I didn't think about it in the beginning when I first started doing this. I just wanted to do a stand-up comedy in Spanish for a long time. And when Netflix asked me, you want to do an English one? And I said, can I do a Spanish one too? And they said, sure, how good is your Spanish? Más o menos.
It's not just Mexicans coming over. People from El Salvador, Nicaragua, Guatemala, Honduras, Peru, Venezuela. They come into America illegally and they steal Mexican jobs. Are you fucking serious? We gotta make America great for Mexicans again.
Ahorita hay muchos hombres aquí con mujeres muy bonitas. Siempre decimos lo mismo, ¿verdad? Me rayé, cabrón. No te rayaste. Ella se rindió.
Were you born in the United States or were you born?
No, I was born in Mexico. I was born in a little town, Ruiz Cortines, Sinaloa, by Los Mochis and Guamuchi.
When did you come to the United States? What age?
I came when I was little, I guess five years old.
And you picked up English very quickly by going to schools, by hanging out with friends.
I picked up English. Well, I spoke Spanish the first 5 years of my life fluently, I guess. And then when I got to the United States, kindergarten was tough, you know. When I was a kid, there was no ESL class. There was no English as a second language, you know. So I had to pick it up quick or move behind. I remember when we had to stand in front of the class and see the ABCs and everybody finished theirs. And I stopped at T and I didn't know the rest.
So now fast forward. You're a stand-up comedian. People start getting to know your name. You've been touring in English, which is really interesting because if you're born in Mexico and you're learning English, you haven't assimilated enough for white people to feel that you're a part of their society, obviously.
Yeah, man. Even though we watch the same television shows.
Yeah.
We like the same food. We buy the same things. And I'm not speaking for other Latinos. But I know that Mexicans, we always buy American cars. But I grew up happy, man. I grew up in the housing projects. And it was like a little community with a bunch of people. It started off, I guess, it was all African-American. And then Mexicans took over. And then Vietnamese and then Filipinos. We had like a melting pot. In the housing projects, like in the 80s, a lot of Vietnamese moved into the housing projects. And then like in 82, 83, a lot of Salvadorians from El Salvador. So I guess my neighborhood was a refugee camp.
Hilarious.
I never thought about it like that till right now.
So tell me what the real concept of preparing for like this meant for you? Like, what was the theme of what you wanted to do with this compared to the other shows you've done?
The first special was called I'm Not Like That No More. You know, the saying when you date somebody and you try to take it to the next level and she stops you and she goes, I'm not like that no more. You're special. So that was my first special, was just my stand, all my jokes I have ever written. Second special was more personal because my wife and I produced it. And it was called Translate This, which basically was talking about me translating for my parents and doing all the mostly the immigrant story of how I got here. And then this special, we went a little darker. I felt more comfortable talking about the bad stuff that happened within my family. I talk about domestic violence, you know, in the middle of my 1 hour. I talk about an incident that really happened in my house when my dad came home, you know, really drunk and abusive. And I talk about the situation that happened and how we never really dealt with it. And the joke is really mainly about how families here in America and around the world never deal with stuff like that. Like somebody gets hit, you know, an adult hits another adult and you're a child watching it. We never, like, nobody talks to us about it. Like, that was wrong or take it to therapy, and we just gotta put it behind us. So I talk about that on one of my bits, and I talk about raising kids while being a drug addict. You know how tough it is. You know how to be a horrible father and a bad dad, and then coming to realize later on that I was a good dad. You know, I survived. You know, and I did a special, you know, it's like a survival story, you know.
Sounds like it was a lot of therapy for you, man.
Yes, it is, because a lot of stuff that I talk about, I should have dealt with it many, many years ago, but I didn't. And I had it in my back of my head to do it as a comedy bit before, but never did it. And I finally did it. And one of the bits, when you watch it, it was tough. saying it on stage because I was holding back a lot of emotion, a lot of tears. And when my mom saw that bit, she kind of went, she gasped a little bit, like a mom, you know, porque está diciendo todo esto. Estos son secretos de nosotros. Esto pasó en la casa para no tener para todo el mundo que sepan, you know. Why did you talk about this? This is our stuff, our personal stuff, not for the whole world to know. But then she laughed. And then when people were walking out the show, she said, it didn't happen the way he said it. He only remembers the bad stuff. He should do a jokes about the good stuff, you know, like when he was sick and I made him soup. When I would walk him to school holding his hand. And I'm like, you know, that's not funny. You know, tragedy is funny, not that.
How do you feel so confident about opening up about yourself, but also about stuff that other people don't want to know? Because remember, when you tell a joke about something that happened to someone you know, you're involving them in that. And now they start making either fun of them or they start judging them. So it's not necessarily kept exclusively to you. It's almost like it's spread out to everybody else. How do you make, how does comedy allow for people to be okay with those moments?
I think if it's coming from the person telling a story, like it really happened to him, like a tragedy, and it's real, and somehow he made it funny, the audience knows right away for some reason, you know, like he knows, they know that it's coming from a real part of his life. Plus, I workshop the joke many times, and and the only way that joke worked, if I paint a picture and say the joke as a five-year-old, because it happened when I was five. When I was saying the jokes as a grown man, it looked like this grown man is so bitter and he's talking bad about this stuff in his life. But when I really get into the character and talk about it and put my mom's voice in it, in her character, and my dad and my little brother, and then me being innocent as a six-year-old boy, five-year-old boy, and talk about it, it becomes more real. It's like you're watching it happen the way it really happened, and you're not taking sides. You're not taking my mom's side. You're not taking my side. You're just watching it as a witness, you know, as a non-bipartisan guy watching this sad stuff going down. And then as a comedian, I've been doing it for like 24 years now, 25. I know how to take it to the next level. So I will practice, okay, I'll add this to the bit. I'll add that to the bit. I'll take the crowd here.
You polish it up.
So one of the joke is, when my little brother, who was a victim of the joke too, it really happened to him. He had never heard me say the joke, but I had him on a podcast and I told him about it. He goes, I just remember that one time. And then he goes, and man, when we were talking about it, we had, it was good to talk about it because my brother and I had never dealt with it till now. And it took us, 40 years.
That must have been tough, man.
40 years to finally deal with it. And then we dealt with the mother stuff because we talked about how my dad, he never had time for us, you know, like he always worked. And I talked to my little brother played on Pop Warner football, tackle football. And he was like the best quarterback. And they won city champs of that little league, tackle football. Mm-hmm. And then I asked my brother, after he was bragging about how good he was, que la chingada, badass. Then I asked, and I crushed them. You know, I didn't want, sorry to say I crushed them, but I had to ask, you know, because I put that in my bit. How many times did my mom and dad go see you play? None. I remember playing and scoring touchdowns, and I would see other parents cheer their kids for blocking and for catching the ball, for tackling somebody. But I'm the one that's throwing all the touchdowns. I'm the one that's taking this team and holding him on my back. And they never went. they never went, and he was sad about it.
Yeah, man. So this seems to be almost like an autobiography, like a journal that's been opened up for you to share with the rest of the world, and somehow find the funny moments in many of the tragedies of your life.
My brother found a funny moment immediately.
Wow.
And I told my brother, that's the punchline for the joke, by the way. What? Yeah. What you just said right now was the punchline. Because after all that, my brother said, because I told him, remember when you played baseball and you were pitching and you were good? He goes, I asked him, how many times did my mom and dad go? Not one time. And we lived across the street.
It's crazy, dude.
That's the punchline for one of my jokes. And we lived across the street. Whenever we would play baseball, my dad would look out the window and close the curtains.
Crazy. Bueno, Felipe, te quiero hacer la pregunta sobre the Spanish one. I am the host of a television show. I do it in English and I do it in Spanish. It's on NBC and it's on Telemundo. So when I record all my spots in English and then I record all my spots in Spanish. And then the editors put it together and it comes out on those two networks. I've asked people so many times that are bilingual, that are born in the United States, that are Latinx, Latino, American, why doesn't everybody do it? And there's another guy named Jose Diaz Balart. I'm not sure if you know him. He's on Telemundo. He's also on MSNBC, and NBC does nightly news. He's the only other guy that I know that does that. The reason I'm talking to you today is because you're the third guy I know that has done something like this. And when I read the fine line on the email, it said, first person to ever do something like this. So here's my question. Whose idea was it to do it in two languages, in two separate tapings?
It was all my idea.
And what did they, when they heard the idea, what did they think you were crazy?
Yeah, I thought I was crazy. They thought I couldn't pull it off because I didn't speak that good of a Spanish. But I delved into it, man. I went full, hardcore, you know, deep. I would practice every morning, man. Like I would wake up. I would do what an actor would do. You know, I found out how De Niro would do this in the morning. You know, he'll wake up in the character and put on the character's shoes. And how would the character wear his jacket? What would the character do when he wakes up? Would he look this way? Or when you look that way, you know, what would he do? And that to be different from the person that he really is. I don't speak Spanish at all, so I don't have no one to speak Spanish with. So I wake up in the morning, listen to Piolín in the morning.
Gracias, Emilio Estefan. Te agradezco mucho.
You know, I listen to him because he talks super, super fast.
Y prepárense porque pueden hacer ustedes preguntas también a Emilio Estefan.
And then I will go listen to CNN. Pues Camilo.
De inmediato presento a mi primer invitado por sus manos o la de sus técnicos.
Then I will switch to Telemundo, you know, in the evening for the Telemundo news, which is 24 hours on Sirius. And then I will go to a Spanish podcast and then listen to my tape that I recorded on my phone, my Spanish set. And once I will get to the show, I wouldn't speak English to anybody. If somebody spoke to me in English, I would answer in Spanish. So just get ready, man. So when I finally get on stage, I'm already ready to speak Spanish without having to think in English and then translate the word in Spanish, which takes a long time if you're not ready.
A veces peleo con mi niño. Tú no eres mi papá. Yo sé que no soy tu papá. Si yo era tu papá, no estuviera aquí, cabrón.
Do you feel you're funny in Spanish?
I felt funnier in Spanish because coming from a Spanish speaker, I feel like I feel that I'm speaking in English, but with in a Spanish way. Some words I have problems with.
So why do you think no one else that is bilingual, Cristel Alonso, Fluffy Iglesias, Gabriel Iglesias, why haven't they been able to pull this off? Why has no other Mexican comedian or any Latino comedian that say they're Latino and that they do speak Spanish, why do you think they've never been able to pull this off?
I don't know. I think they're comfortable in their shoes, you know? But I really think that if anybody else is going to do one in Spanish, it's going to be either George Lopez or Paul Rodriguez, because I know that Paul Rodriguez is fluent in Spanish.
So why hasn't he done it before, man?
And Paul Rodriguez has done a, I've heard, and Paul Rodriguez told me that he did a Spanish show for HBO in Puerto Rico many, many years ago. But I don't know where that tape is. And when I wanted to do it, this is why I wanted to do it. I have fans in Morocco, and they posted a video, and these girls are nothing to do with the religion, but they are Muslim, and they wear the hijab.
Yeah. Huh?
They wear it, you know, but their face is open, but they wear it, and they look like Muslim girls. They live in Morocco. They speak Spanish. You know, they're from Spain. And
so awesome.
They have a video that I posted up on my Instagram, and they're both quoting a movie line from Blood In, Blood Out. So these two girls are quoting Blood In, Blood Out, and then when I posted on my Instagram, it had like 238,000 likes. People were hitting them up, and then when these girls came to America on vacation. They didn't go to Disneyland first. They didn't go to New York. They didn't go to San Francisco first. They went to Boyle Heights and took a picture in front of the same pine tree that's in Blood In, Blood Out. And they're like this.
Wow. That's
so when I saw that, I know that the East LA, Boyle Heights, lowrider culture, it's worldwide now. It's in Japan. It's in Germany. It's in some parts of New Zealand. You know, it's all over the world now. So I want to take the American stand-up style to Latin America and to Spanish-speaking countries. Because I've seen comedians from Mexico. You know, they're funny, but their Spanish is like at a different level from my Spanish. I don't understand it. They talk too fast.
Yeah.
I really have to focus and pay attention like this.
Yeah.
But I don't get it. But I get other comedians. You know, I get Polo Polo. I get Platanito, India Maria, Capulina, Los Polivoces. Because they're talking Spanish, you know, at the level that I am. But the newer comedians that are coming from Mexico, they sound more Spanish to me. Like maybe they're from Venezuela. Or from Spain, but they don't speak the way I speak. And when I didn't understand it, I was like, if I don't understand it, that means there's other people who don't understand this. So I better do one in Spanish too, so we could all understand it. So that was my motivation, to do one in Spanish and blow it up. Because I know there's a singer out of the Bronx. His name is Romeo Santos.
Yeah, bachatero.
And he sings bachata. And his Spanish is perfect. And he's never left the Bronx. I mean, all the Spanish speakers know who he is. There's people, the people who speak English know who he is. Because that's a genre of music that you could go to work all week and speak English. But on Saturday, you put on your bachata outfit and you speak Spanish the whole weekend. So I know that, and he has 179 million views. If Justin Bieber has 500 views, Romeo Santos has 1 billion. You know, he has way more than Justin Bieber. And a lot of people have never heard of him. And then there's a band called Fuerza Regida. Out of San Bernardino. I hosted a show for them two weeks ago. I had to Google them. And they have a song that has 179 million views. These guys went platinum and gold without ever being played on the radio. So, and they all speak English, perfect English, but they sing in Spanish.
That's nuts.
So, there's a market out there, man, and I want to capitalize on it. And I know that this band's fan, Romeo Santos fans who speak Spanish, are going to get my comedy. And my comedy is for all those people who speak Spanish and speak English, but never forgot about the culture.
I love this, Felipe. You've really inspired me to continue to check your stuff out, man, and to look at these other bands and to see the importance behind being bilingual in America. That is not only a business decision, but it's a cultural decision.
I interviewed this guy when I was interviewing that band name. His name is Jimmy Humildes. He was born in America, and he's the first Mexican-American to have a record label that go platinum and gold, also without being played on the radio. He has a band, a group called El Fantasma, and that guy's out of Mexico, and 200 million views on YouTube. Just like, and they're bringing back old school norteña, you know? So I know that these kids, like, they all speak English. They live an American lifestyle. But on the weekends, man, they put on their cowboy boots and their skinny jeans and their belt buckle. And, man, and they become Mexican again.
Dude, congratulations, Felipe. I wish you the best of luck on your Netflix show, your movies, and all your projects, man.
Bye-bye. Thank you very much.
And before I say goodbye, here are three Latin tracks you might want to add to your playlist this weekend. Nuestra Historia, Humboldt. Centro, Miel. Tiempo, Gravité. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review on our page. Your support can help the show reach a larger audience. Also, if you like a shout out on the show, you can reach me at Twitter at @JackRicoOfficial. But in the meantime, I'd like to thank Felipe Esparza for coming on the show. His new bilingual comedy special, Bad Decisions, Malas Decisiones, is out in two languages on Netflix right now. I'm Jack Rico. See you next week on another episode of Highly Relevant.